Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I was at the Champions League game in Camp Nou with the CEO of Bet & Win. The offer we had on the table in those days were approximately a 5 years contract, 100 million euros. So I told this guy, okay, let's talk to them, you know, we said. And when the contract was finished, we knew that there's just the last small but the most important obstacle, the Junta Directiva, you know. And I remember exactly where I was sitting, in which restaurant, waiting for the call of the Junta, yes or not. And then I got the call and they said no, they would not accept our proposal because they don't want to have a sponsor on the shirt.
Sebastian Alvarado with the Coffee and Football Podcast, a long-form interview where I sit down with some of the most influential profiles in the game to learn about their lives and career journeys. Today's guest is Arnold Trebesinger, the managing director of FC Barcelona in the Americas, which includes South, Central, and North America. Based out of the team's New York City office, he has overall responsibility for the club's growth ambitions across strategic partnerships, sponsorships, the foundation, and the academies, with the ultimate goal of making Barca the most recognizable brand and most global sports club in the world. Please join me as we discuss his journey and dive in behind the scenes and the inner workings of FC Barcelona. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Arnold Trebesinger. Typically, I do these interviews downtown in the South Street Seaport, but today we're in a different setting, so maybe you can describe where we are now and what the setting is.
Yeah, we are here close to Grand Central Station in Park Avenue 250 at the U.S. headquarters of Football Club Barcelona, and we opened this office a few months ago, back in September last year.
Well, then I should probably also say welcome to New York to you personally as well.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
How has the experience been so far in just living in this city?
Great experience. I'm not living in the city. I'm living in Westchester County in a city called White Plains. The reason why I live there is my family. I have two little boys. And due to the fact that I'm Austrian, I speak to my boys in German. And the official German school is in White Plains. So when my wife and myself started to look for our house, our apartment, we have looked into different places. Obviously, Manhattan and Brooklyn, New Jersey. But our sons took the final decision, and I didn't want them to commute every day to the school. So final decision is White Plains, and we are very happy there. And it's nice for me being all day in the city, you know, work here in this to get the spirit and the flair of the city and the speed and the stress, the positive stress in my point of view. But then it's always nice for me to take the train to Grand Central here, just a block away, and go back to White Plains.
Yeah, I bet, because it's a high noise level in this city as well. So it's nice to once you get out just to decompress a little bit.
Yeah, no, the contrast is great for me, you know. It would be hard for me to live with my family in Manhattan because raising two kids here in the city is quite challenging. So it's a nice contrast for me, and I love the contrast between White Plains and here Midtown Manhattan.
How old are your boys?
My older boy turns 5 and the little one turns 2, so quite.
Are they already footballers?
Yeah, yeah. They play football in the school over there. And obviously, you know, if you work for Barcelona and if you are such a big football fan that like I am, so it's compulsory for them to. But they also like other sports. You know, I've been with my big boy in different games of the Giants. You know, mm-hmm. because I love American football, and he's also a Giants fan. And but yes, he plays football. Yeah.
That's great, yeah, and it's a quite different spectacle, and I'm sure we'll get more in on this as we proceed in this conversation. But in terms of the entertainment approach to putting sporting events together, you know, if you look at how American football and the NFL does it, and compared to European football, and in this case, there's a lot more going on around the game, so to speak.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a completely different, literally, ball game, you know. And this fact is also one of the reasons I wanted to live in the US. I'm a big sports fan, and I worked in the past with different events here in the US, especially in motorsports. And yes, you're right. The approach to sport is here completely different, you know. Sport is here like entertainment. The fan experience and the stadium experience is tremendous. It's completely different, you know. For example, in our stadium in Camp Nou, which is the biggest soccer stadium in Europe, our people, our fans arrive 2 minutes before the beginning of the game. You know, they are then 45 minutes on their seat following the and watching the game, short break, and then 45 minutes or 40 minutes, you know. If you're winning, people leave 5 to 10 minutes before the end of the game in order to avoid the traffic. But here, you know, it starts with the tailgating in the big football arenas, and, you know, people enjoy the game, having some food, some drinks, and yes, they have the game also on the field, on the pitch. But for many of them, it's not the main reason to come to the stadium. You know, it's the entire experience. And yeah, that's a completely different approach. And sports is in the US entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's interesting learnings to grab from that also. At the same time, as there needs to be a bit of a balance, because football obviously has a different history and people have a different relation to it. Here, people grow up with the entertainment factor of it. So they're very, very used to it. But I was happy to see, I was actually in Camp Nou a few weeks ago. It was interesting to see it's built out at least a little bit with some of the sort of entertainment or pre-game. You know, now you have at least places you can go for a drink and so on, which didn't exist a little while ago.
Yeah.
I have typically an opening question I ask everybody, because the theme here is coffee and football. How do you like your coffee, or do you drink coffee?
Yeah. I love coffee. I need the coffee every day. So on my way from Grand Central to the office, I always pass at Starbucks, obviously, to take a coffee. And also here in the office, it's part of the daily routine. And I love coffee, you know. And I used to live in Italy many years ago. And I have to say they make the best coffee. And yeah. I'm used to Italian espresso. But I love also the coffee here. And yes.
What kind of coffee do you get from Starbucks?
I get a grande latte with an extra shot of coffee, so a triple shot. So this is my favorite in the morning. Yeah.
That sounds good. You are the managing director of the Barcelona offices here in New York that covers the Americas, which also includes Latin America and obviously North America. To someone who doesn't know you, or people who aren't familiar with that, how do you typically introduce yourself and describe your role?
My position is managing director of FC Barcelona LLC. So we have an LLC here in the US. And my role is to bring the club to the Americas. You know, I have a great team here of already 8 people. And we want to spread the message of Football Club Barcelona, not only in the US, also in Latin America, where we have already a strong presence thanks to our Latin American players. Our president put 2 years ago a strategic plan into place, which says we should become, until 2021, the most loved, cherished, and most global sports club in the world. And we divided this strategic plan in different areas. And one of these areas is the internationalization of the brand. And this is something we are pushing a lot, starting a few years ago already, opening our first office abroad in Hong Kong. So focused on commercial agreements in the South Asian region. We have 15 people working in this office, and now it was time to open the office in the most important sports market in the world, as we discussed before. And here we are. We want to bring Football Club Barcelona here. We want to increase the numbers of our fans. We have a fan potential of 20 to 25 million people in this country.
Is that what you see as the potential, or is that what you roughly count today?
This is our fan base, you know. There are some studies from Nielsen and from Repricom, and it says this is our core fan base, and we want to increase this fan base. And we want to take advantage of the development of soccer in this country. Soccer is growing during the last 30 years. But during the last years, it became a strong growth. But we are not only here to take advantage of the soccer boom, we also want to support the development of soccer in this country, because I think we understand a lot of soccer, and we want to bring together with all the stakeholders, you know, USSF, MSL, other European clubs, which are doing a great job. Bayern is already here. So we want to support this development, and we also want to learn. It's exactly what we discussed before, you know, for example, stadium experience, fan experience in the stadium. So we have to learn a lot, and these are the most important reasons why we are here.
And you saw it as an important piece to have actual physical presence here. You just mentioned Bayern Munich, which is one of the other teams that has an office, but not that many others other than you and Bayern right now. Yeah. So was that really important that you actually had physical presence here?
Yes. Absolutely, this is key to us, because and I discussed it also with Don Garber and also Suni Ligulati told me that so many football clubs came here during the last years, but they didn't stay here, you know. They came here for some games or for some summer tours, but there's just a few clubs which have a real permanent presence here. Obviously Manchester City with the MLS team here in the Yankee Stadium, Bayern Munich and we. So for us it's key to be here. Because you have to feel the country, you have to feel this sport on site, you know. And we are here, we want to stay here, and we want to grow Football Club Barcelona in this country.
Yeah, and anywhere it's important to kind of understand the cultural nuances, because yes. It's a different audience that has a different relation to the sport. You mentioned Man City as well, which is kind of interesting because the core of that management team also comes from Barcelona, although a very different structure and under very different circumstances. Does the results of the team, does that have any influence on your job?
You know, the last 10 years, Football Club Barcelona have been the most successful years in the history of the club. And we wouldn't be at this position where we are without the last 10 years, you know. Football Club Barcelona has a long history since 1899. But 25 years ago, we won the first Champions League in Wembley. But the last 10 years were really crucial. And obviously, these 10 years, we have Messi with us. You know, he's a very important factor in the success of the last years. So obviously it's important to be successful on the pitch in order to sell the brand. But for us, and this is one of the goals of the strategic plan, we want to develop the brand in the direction which gives us the opportunity to be independent on the results on the pitch, you know, because it's part of the game and part of the sport that you're not able to win always, you know. And this year it was not easy for us. So you cannot win every year treble or Champions League. So you have to be independent when it comes to develop your brand. And when it comes to be commercially sustainable, independent from the results. And that's what we're working on.
There's almost a new coach that's been announced with Ernesto Valverde from Athletic Bilbao. Does that ever have an influence on, say, your job here in the Americas and how they manage, say, for example, because now you have an important summer tour coming up?
We didn't announce the coach. We will announce it next Monday, who will be our next coach. But obviously, it's important to have the right coach to come to the results, you know. And we are planning now the summer tour without having a coach. When the coach will be announced next week, he will have already the plans for summer. And obviously, this tour is so important to us, you know, because having the team here, having the big stars here, and all the stars will come with the team, gives us the possibility to be closer to our fans here, because it's not always easy to sell a brand which is playing every week 5,000 miles away, you know. So obviously there's live broadcasting on beIN Sports. There are many possibility to follow the league on digital medias. But having the team here gives us really a great, great opportunity to show the American what is soccer about, what is Football Club Barcelona about. And especially we are looking forward to the game in Miami, first Clásico after more than 30 years played outside of Spain. And this will be a showcase for us and really crucial for the development of the next years, because we don't know yet if the team will come back next year, because there's only one summer where the team can travel. We have also our interest in the Asian market, so we don't know what will happen in 2018. So saying that, it means that we have really to guarantee a strong exposure this summer with our team here.
Obviously, it's in your big interest to have the team in the Americas versus in Asia, although that's an important component of it as well. But what does that process typically look like in trying to get the team over?
You know, the process starts that we get offers from different promoters, organizers in different parts of the world, not only US, it's also Asia, it's also Europe. And then we sit down with our commercial team and see what are our commercial interests. But obviously the final decision always takes the sports department, you know, because they have to guarantee the team is when the league starts in August, the team is in the condition to be successful from the beginning of the year. So it's always a compromise between the commercial interest and the sports interest. But we are very interested in giving our team the best possibilities and best condition to prepare the new season. And this is the case here. So it was easy to take the decision for us to come here to the U.S.,
I want to get back into more of the details around the team and your work, but I'd like to know, what's a typical day for you? So from the moment you get up, what kinds of routines do you have, and then from there on?
Mm-hmm. Well, normally I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, depends on my kids if it's earlier, but normally it's 6 o'clock, and having a light breakfast at home, and then 6:45, 7 o'clock, taking my car to the metro station, as I have a 3 minutes drive to the Metro North in White Plains, and then I take the metro to Grand Central, grab my Starbucks coffee, and come here to the office and start my daily work. I'm traveling a lot lately, also traveling to Barcelona a lot, having some meetings, but this is the typical start of my day when I hear me in New York City.
Do you have any routines, any workouts, any reading you do in the morning?
Yes, no workout in the morning. This is hard for me, so I try to do it in the afternoon. But obviously, when I'm on the train, I'm reading all the Spanish newspapers. We have the news report from Barcelona. So when I'm in the office in the morning, I've read already all the 4 sports newspapers and also different...
Which ones do you read? Sport?
Sport, Mundo Deportivo, and the Madrid's Marca and Us, and then some Catalan. And so I have the most important. So I take advantage from the 45-50 minute drive with the train from White Plains to Grand Central to be updated. And because it's 6 hours behind Europe, so I'm in the office and I know everything what happens in the sports world in Europe.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you need to read both kind of the Madrid papers and the Barca papers to get a more balanced view, right?
Exactly. You have to read both and then you have to make a balance and then you know really what happened. Yeah.
Is there anything you do on a consistent basis in order to keep evolving yourself? Do you have any kinds of routines or any types of readings that you do in order to keep evolving as a manager and a leader of the office here?
Yeah. No, important is we have also newspapers from newsletters from different marketing and sports industries. And that's what I'm really doing permanently here also in the office. So it's important to be updated, and that's important. Yeah.
Which ones would you recommend?
Yeah, we have a Sports Call, which is really very useful, and then different from Barcelona in Spanish language and also in German language. So because I also have good contact still to Germany, which is a strong market of soccer especially. So this is a very important information source for me. Yeah.
So you speak, English, obviously, German, Spanish. Do you speak Catalan as well?
I don't speak Catalan, but I understand 95% of Catalan, you know, and I also speak Italian because I used to live and study for 1 year in Italy. To speak Catalan is quite difficult, you know. It's not the fact that if you speak Spanish, you can speak immediately Catalan. I had some lessons and classes when I was living in Barcelona, but it's still quite difficult for me, you know, and not only for me. I have so many, when I was living 14 years in Barcelona, and I have many friends from outside, and only a few of them really speak Catalan. Only those speak Catalan who are married to Catalans. If they need to speak in a family, then it's easier for you to speak it. But I still have it on my to-do list to learn, because it's so important in our club, because it's our official language. And let's say 70 to 80% of the emails I get in the club from the club side is in Catalan. So I understand everything, so I can read them. But I have to answer in Castellano, in Spanish, but this is no big deal. But it would sometimes make things easier in the club if you speak Catalan. But yes, I still have it on my to-do list, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's very complex. I thought it was much easier to learn Italian and maybe even French to a certain extent than actually Catalan.
Yeah, and I have the impression that Catalan is closer to Italian and to French than to Spanish.
Yeah.
So, and that makes me a little bit, or it's easier for me to understand it because I speak Italian and this supports me in understanding Catalan. But yeah, I understand nearly everything, but it's heavy to difficult to speak.
Yeah, I can see how it's such an important component also of the club because it's such a Catalan identity.
Right.
And I'm sure there's, these little nuances and details that kind of goes into not only how they approach the language, but how they approach that life, because it's fairly different from the rest of Spain.
Yeah, exactly. Especially the nuances you mentioned are so important to understand. But I can say that I understand these nuances because I was living 14 years in Spain and in Barcelona. And I think I understand the Catalan people. I understand how they live, how they think, how they behave. So I understand them. And I have to say, I love the Catalan way of life. And otherwise, it wouldn't be possible to live 14 years in by the way, this beautiful city. And it wouldn't be possible to work in Football Club Barcelona.
You're originally from Austria. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the southern part of Austria, which is close to the border of Italy and Slovenia, former Yugoslavia.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 18, I came to Vienna. I studied in Vienna and studied also 1 year in Italy. I graduated in Vienna in political science, so I'm a political scientist. So I spent the first 18 years in Carinthia of my life, and then until I turned 25, 26 in Vienna and Italy, and obviously traveling a lot.
In order to get to know you, is there anything I need to know about the place where you grew up?
The place where I grew up is a place without big city. The biggest city in our area is 80,000 people. So I grew up in a small village with 3,000 people. So with protected by the family and enjoying really every day. But when I was 18, I decided this is too small for me. I want to see the rest of the world. But yes, I think the people are very humilde, humble, very humble in this area. And this gives me a sense of respect for other people and especially the importance of family. This is something I want to try to live every day. And this was a very important background for me.
What did your parents do for a living?
They were a teacher, both of them. My father was a teacher and my mother not in the same school. And my father in the mornings was teaching in school. In the afternoon, he was teacher of piano. So he was musician also. It's two jobs.
Do you play?
Yes, I used to play a lot, obviously, in the family. But then you don't have the time and lose it a little bit. But I want to recuperate, and I think it wouldn't take too long for me to recuperate. But my father died very young. This was very interesting experience for me. It was in 1994. And I have a younger sister, which is 10 years younger than me. And, she was 12. She came home from school and found my father dead in the sofa, and she called me. I was in Vienna. And, so why do I tell this? Because this was a very important experience in my life, And, so it's in my life is a before and after, And, it was a difficult situation in this moment and in weeks following and hard. But once you come over the situation, you feel and you can realize that something like that can make you stronger. It's everybody says something like this, But if you really have it in your curriculum and you lived it, but you really know that this is the truth, And since then, I changed a little bit the way I see life, and it helped me a lot.
In what way did it change the way you look at life?
No, in the way that you really know what's important, It's important to give everything a job and to work hard because this is part of your life. But there are also other things in life, you know, family and health and friendships. And you get a different view of life, you know. And somebody, I think everybody gets this approach. Some of us earlier and some of us later, you know. It depends on your on the development and on your personal experiences, you know. But I see that you have to enjoy really what you're doing because life is too short, you know. But this brings me back to Barca, and I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and I'm more than lucky that my dream came true, being here in this club.
So you studied political science.
Yes.
What was your first job after school?
FC Barcelona is my second job.
Yeah.
So I had worked for one company before. I used to work for 17 years for a sports marketing, sports sponsorship company.
Called
WWP. Weirater Wensland Partner. Weirater is Harti Weirater, one of the owners. And Hanni Wenzel is his wife, the other owners. And both of them are very famous in Austria. They are former ski racer. He is Austrian. She's from Liechtenstein originally. And he's world champion. And she's two times Olympic champion. She won the Olympics in the US in 1980 in Lake Placid. And they started the agency in the middle of the 80s. When Harti Weirater won the world championship in Austria in 82, he was the hero in Austria. And since then, I'm a big fan of, was a little boy when he won the championship. And since these times, I was a big fan of Harti Weirater. So when I finished my career, I said, I don't want to work in the politics because this was my inspiration to start with political science. I said, I prefer to work in sports, you know, and I found out, thanks to my research, that Harti has a company, an agency, and I called him, and yes, 3 months or 4 months after I started, this was in 98.
What did you tell him?
Yes, I tried to call him, and, you know, secretary after three times, okay, she passed me the line to Harti, and I said, I'm biggest sportsman you can imagine, and I want to work for you, because you cannot find a... In these days, the company was very small, you know, 15 people, now they're 100, 150. And I said, I want to work with you, and you need to at least to invite me to interview. And he was quite surprised, and he invited me for interview a few months after. And this was the start of my career in the sports industry. This was in 98.
What did that then look like? You ended up becoming the managing director of the company. But what kinds of sponsorship and marketing types of deals were you working on then?
I was hired to implement a sponsorship deal in Formula One. This was when a tobacco company, Winfield, doesn't exist anything anymore, became sponsor of Williams Formula One team. And we brought a beer company to this to the Williams team, a German beer brand called Veltins. And Harti and his team, they needed people to activate the sponsorship. And this was my first job in Formula One, working for the Williams teams, and in this case for a beer brand. And then when BMW entered Formula One in 2000, I was working in the Formula One team from BMW. They also made a deal with Williams, BMW's Williams, and I was working in the hospitality and sponsorship program of BMW in the Formula One with Williams. And at the same time, I was project manager of the biggest ski race in the world, because my former company is still owner of the rights of the Hahnenkamm Rennen in Kitzbühel. So I'm not sure if this is very known in the US, but this is the event in Europe, you know, and in ski racing, you know. And that was managing this project for 2 years, from 1999 until 2001.
How did it then happen that this Barcelona opportunity came about?
I started the office of FWP in Barcelona in 2001. So I left Austria and left Liechtenstein, and I went to Barcelona. And I started the office in Barcelona from zero. So it were just me and another person. And we start with motorsports activities. So I was working in MotoGP, because the right owners of the MotoGP series is a Spanish company based in Madrid and in Barcelona. And that was the reason that we opened the office, because we wanted to be closer to the MotoGP, to the client. And we brought many sponsors to MotoGP. So one of the most important projects in Barcelona in my company was MotoGP, but we started to work also in the soccer business. And the first client we had in Spain in the soccer business was Siemens Mobile as a shirt sponsor for Real Madrid. But then we tried to bring the first shirt sponsor to FC Barcelona. It was a brand called Bet and Win, which later was renamed to Bwin and became sponsor of Real Madrid. So we negotiated because Bet and Win was our client. So I was working as an agency for Bet and Win. We developed all the marketing and sponsorship strategy. And we talked with Barcelona to bring Bet and Win as a shirt sponsor. And we had already a negotiated contract, and with the people in the club, everything was agreed. But then we had to pass the Junta Directiva, the board of directors, and the approval, but we couldn't get the approval from the board. They didn't want to put a commercial sponsor in these times on their shirt. So Bet and Win decided what we can do, because Spain was a very important market in those days for Bet and Win, and they needed a blue chip brand in soccer, you know. So they asked us to go to Real Madrid because they were struggling with Siemens Mobile and with BenQ, was the follower of Siemens Mobile. And they accepted the proposal, so we brought Bwin to Real Madrid. The years after, I was working with different projects with FC Barcelona, with different clients, so I had permanently contact with our friends from Barca. And when Mr. Bartomeu was elected in 2015 as the new president for the next year, until 2021, he and his team asked me, and one of his vice presidents, they asked me if I want to go to New York and to run the office. And I said, yes, obviously, this is a very interesting project for me, and I want to do that, yeah.
Just to take a couple of steps back there, and when you approach these big clubs with those types of sponsorship opportunities, how does that happen? Take me through the process when you start those conversations, and how do you sell it in?
There is no general rule on that, you know. It always depends. I explained the case of Bet and Win, which was really very interesting for us, you know, because they wanted to grow the business of online betting, and they needed to promote the brand, you know. So we sat down with them. We were the agency working for them on an exclusive basis, and that. So what can we do? Which are your most important countries? And so we discussed a small sponsorship with FC Barcelona. And then I remember I was at a Champions League game in Camp Nou with the CEO of Bet and Win. There were obviously no sponsors on the shirt of Barca in those days. It was in 2002, 2003, and he said, why we don't talk to our friends of Barcelona and to go on the shirt? I said, look, are you sure? You know, that would be very difficult to convince them, because our Catalan friends, they don't want to have a sponsor on their shirt because they're so unique. But if we could convince them, this would be a lot of money. And he said to me, how much would be? I said, maybe this number. And he said, how much? I think the offer we had on the table in those days were approximately 5 years contract, 100 million euros. So it was a lot of money in those days, you know. But the development of the sports industry and soccer was very fast during the last years. So I told this guy, okay, let's talk to them, you know. We sat down and we negotiated it, and obviously we all the details of the rights. And when the contract was finished, we knew that there's just the last small but the most important obstacle, the Junta Directiva, you know. And I remember where I was sitting, in which restaurant, waiting for the call of the Junta, yes or not, and then I got the call, and they said no. They would not accept our proposal because they don't want to have a sponsor on the shirt, which was okay in this time. But coming back to your question, it's not always the same structure. It depends, really, you know. But in this case, it was a very nice and interesting project, and ended up at the shirt of Real Madrid.
Yeah, that was an interesting case. It was around the time the club was in a very big deficit as well. Hadn't been doing that well for years. Obviously, the new management team with Laporta and Ingla and Soriano and that team came in.
Exactly.
And in the end, they opted for, I think it was the UNICEF deal. So it was a very different approach.
Yeah, the UNICEF approach was and is still not a sponsorship, you know.
Yeah.
We are paying a nice amount of money to UNICEF, which we're proud of, in order to give them the chance to be on our shirt, you know. So it was not really a sponsorship. It was quite the opposite, if you will. But this shows exactly what is Football Club Barcelona about, you know. We are a Mexican club. We are more than a club. And it's an approach like the UNICEF approach shows exactly what this club is all about.
So when you stepped in to your role, what did that look like in terms of the main ask? And then how did you approach that in implementing a plan?
Obviously, I mentioned before that we have also an office in Hong Kong, but the office in Hong Kong has a different strategy, a different plan, different objectives. This is more or less 100% commercial office. So their big goal is to look for commercial opportunity in the South Asian market. Here in the US is different, you know. Obviously, on the one hand, we have to optimize our commercial opportunities. We have to increase our portfolio of sponsors. We have already great sponsors, which we're very proud of in this country, but we have to increase our portfolio of sponsors. But this is not the only goal of the office here. We also want to increase the awareness of our brand and to bring the fact that we are more than a club also to this country. You know, we have a foundation, FC Barcelona Foundation, which works with different and very interesting partners, UNICEF, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Shakira, Messi Foundation. And this is something we want to bring also to the US. You know, we are supporting with our foundation approximately 700,000 kids every year.
In the US only?
Not in the US, on a worldwide scale.
On a worldwide.
And we want to bring this opportunity, helping kids also to the US. So it's not only commercial, it's not only sporty, it's not only brand building, it's also bring to the US and explain our friends in the US that we are more than a club.
How's your performance measured?
Well, the measuring in a sponsorship in a commercial partners is quite easy, you know. We have a business plan and with some figures at the end and with some new sponsors, and we have to fulfill this business plan, you know. And on the other hand, we are measuring through Nielsen's companies, the brand, the fan bases, which is easily to compare. And something which is very important to us, which I didn't mention before, is the football schools called FTB Scholars, which we want to increase in terms of number dramatically in the US. We have, by end of this year, we have 6 schools in the US, plus 6 in Canada. Part of our strategic plan, which I mentioned before, until 2021, is to bring up to 25 schools to the US. So this is a very heavy plan and hard plan, and but we are on a good way, and I think this could be possible, and this is easy to measure.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Another thing that is quite unique about Barcelona and that's talked about quite a bit is the management of the team, the structure, the ownership structure of the club, comparing to many of the other big clubs out there. Can you kind of describe what that structure looks like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Our owners are 145,000 members.
Is that a set number?
We have, at the moment, it's not possible to become new members. Only you can give it in the family, father to the kids. But for the moment, this is a strategic decision from the club. We don't want to increase this number. Maybe in the future this will change. But at the moment, we are approximately, I think, 147,000 members. And we have to bring all important decisions to these members. Obviously difficult to ask 140,000 members every day, what do you think? So there are some rules established within our constitution of the club. And we hold once a year a so-called general assembly, which I think approximately 3,000 to 4,000 people, which are randomized, selected from the 147,000. So day 3,000 to 4,000 come to Barcelona, sit in a big venue, and we ask them. You want Qatar Airways or Rakuten as our new shirt sponsor. So there are a few decisions which have to be asked our members. And the structure is completely different than many of the clubs in the Premier League, because there are some owners, Russian or Middle East people who own these clubs. And our structure is so different. On the one hand, it makes it more complicated when it comes to decision-making process. But this is such a unique situation, and this makes Barcelona also more than a club. And we're proud of this situation, and we don't want to change it, because this is football club Barcelona all about. And this is, on the one hand, it's difficult, but we have to really earn every euro we want to invest in the team. We have to earn, you know. There are other clubs which have it easier, you know, if there is the financial background a little bit different. But for us, this is our situation, and I think this makes us so special.
Does that have any influence in the way you structure deals with potential commercial partners and sponsors here? Like, how is that vetted and decided on in the organization?
You know, the smaller deals, the smaller sponsorships, we don't need to ask our members, our assemblies. We have to ask if there are contracts on the long term. We have to ask if we are allowed to put a commercial partner on our new stadium, for example. But the smaller deals, you know, this is part of the agreement of the constitution. We can decide on other criteria like every other club.
What would you say are your biggest challenges in the U.S. market?
You know, I was in football, soccer is growing in this country, and many European clubs want to be here in the U.S. and take advantage of this development. But on the other hand, nobody is waiting for us. You know? Nobody is waiting for a football club Barcelona. So we have to be consequent in our strategy. We have to increase our awareness, and we have to be here in the market. And the biggest challenge is the big market in this industry. And I'm not talking about sports industry. As I mentioned before, I'm talking about entertainment. Because we are not only competing against other European clubs here. We are competing against MLS. We are competing against the Mexican League. We are competing against four other big soccer leagues. We are competing with Broadway. We are competing with Disney. So there is a big market, and I think there is space for everybody. But we have to really be consequent in our strategy, and we have to be consequent in implementing our way.
And kind of more specifically in your role, what are your challenges? Is there anything that keeps you up at night?
No, the only thing that keeps me up at night are my kids. But it's sometimes challenging because the fact that we are 5,000 miles away from Barcelona, from the headquarters, sometimes challenging, you know, because also the time difference, the 6 hours doesn't make easy when it comes to decision-making process. And this is something sometimes challenging, you know. I know there are different possibilities of the communication, modern. But there is no culture in a club having different offices, you know. Manchester City is used to this, you know, because this is part of their strategy during last years. But for us, it's new for a football club Barcelona. And the mentality of the people in Barcelona has to be adapted to the new globalization. And we are in a good way, but this takes still a lot of time, you know.
What's the most surprising thing you've come across in the sort of U.S. sports market? What's something that maybe you had a perception when you came here that it's a certain way, but you came here and it surprised you?
Surprised. For me, I knew that people here to the sports a different approach, you know. I knew that that sports is more entertainment. What me surprised a little bit is the fact that for fans and for the sports consumer, it's not so important to win, you know. For them, it's here more important to be part of the game. But the fact to be successful, to win, is nice to have, and they appreciate if the team win. But it's not the most important factor for them to visit the sports arena, you know. This is different in Europe, because especially in our club, FC Barcelona, wherever we participate, we want to win. We want to be the best. Not always possible, obviously, but and this is something which maybe surprises too much, but which is interesting fact from when it comes to the consumption of sports in this country.
Dr. as we touched on earlier. You see what other sports entities or entertainment entities do here and what they do differently from a commercial standpoint. What would be some organizations that you look up to that you think that a club like Barcelona has a lot of learning to extract from?
For me, the most interesting thing is when I go to a sports arena, you know, is it Madison Square Garden or to MetLife Stadium? Because what, and I'm a commercial guy, you know, I was working in sponsorship all my life, and but what I'm seeing, the on-site experience, also the activations for sponsors is unbelievable, you know. Recently, I was at a Rangers game, and because an Austrian guy, I know Michael Grammer is playing for the Rangers, and I love ice hockey. I used to play ice hockey when I was young. But, you know, every 2 minutes when there is a break, something is happening for the sponsors, you know. And this is something which it's really different to Europe, you know. Obviously, soccer, it's more complicated because there are not too many breaks. But the professionalism and the dedication for the consequent activation of the sponsorship is unbelievable, you know. And this is something where we are watching, where we are observing, and we want to learn also in this regard here in the US.
Any specific tactics that you've already started implementing in the club?
It's too early because, you know, in order to implement this special fan experience, you need to have the infrastructure and the conditions for that, you know. Our Camp Nou Stadium is a nice stadium and impressive stadium. You have been there for several times. But it's not the newest and the most modern stadium. So we are working on a project. For sure you heard about it, for a new stadium, the Spy Barça. We want to remodeling the stadium completely. I'm talking about a 500 to 600 million investment. And especially also because of the fact to set the conditions exactly for what we discussed before, you know. We want to bring our people, our fans, our members earlier to the stadium. But in order to bring them earlier before the beginning of the game, you have to offer them infrastructure, you have food and beverage, you have to offer them different things, you know. And we are working also with a US-based company, which is called Van Wagner, which supports us in the development of the new Spy Barça product in terms of fan experience. And then when it comes also to the main sponsor, to the naming sponsor. And we are already working on some ideas, but it's still too early because here since a few months. But we will copy some interesting aspects of the big leagues, especially the big leagues and the activities on site in their venues.
Yeah. Well, there's obviously a lot of room for growth. I think football has been far behind some of the more sort of commercially driven sports. I think America has obviously been at the forefront of that. Mm-hmm. At the same time with that, I think comes an important balance because it is a slightly different audience that has a different relationship to the sport that's grown up in a different way. I guess, how do you manage kind of that balance and ensure that it doesn't come across as overly commercial?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, sometimes the flip side here in America, that sometimes it's too commercial, it's too many logos, it's too much corporate messaging around the sport, and that tends to draw criticisms from the true fans.
So yeah, absolutely. But again, this is part of the culture in this country, you know, and I hope nobody wants to change this because this is so natural for this country, you know, and that brings me again to the point that we cannot copy everything because you cannot break the soccer game every 2 minutes in order to make a commercial break, you know. But these are two different approaches to the sport, and I don't know which one is more effective or more interesting. I love both of them. And what we have to do with soccer, we cannot come to the same approach in terms of entertainment, but we have to come closer to this to be also an interesting product for the US.
It was announced fairly recently, the Barça Innovation Hub. Are you specifically doing anything with that? And what is it to begin with?
Yeah, the Barça Innovation Hub is an incubator of knowledge. We want to be an incubator of knowledge. We have so different areas where we gathered knowledge in the last decades, and we want to open this knowledge to the public. We want to increase this knowledge and this know-how through cooperations with different institutions, universities, but also single brains, which could help us in increase this knowledge. And we want to give it to open this knowledge for the public. We are cooperating with different universities. We've already signed some agreements here in the US But this is a long-term project, the Innovation Hub, and we're working still on some different areas. But it's part of our strategy to become the most global sports club in the world.
Fans today are very mobile savvy, and it's all about technology, and they're very connected 24/7. How would you describe the club's digital strategy in this market?
Mm-hmm. You know, we just announced a few weeks ago a new digital director who used to work for Manchester City a few years ago, and he just started
with Richard.
Russell Stopford. Russell Stopford. And we will invest a lot of money also in our digital development. And because we had some, let's say, some issues in the past in our digital areas, because the digital assets were divided in different areas in the club, and which was okay in the past, but which is not the basis for the future, the right structure for the future. And I think Russell is doing a great job working in the right direction. And it's too early to talk about it, but there will come a lot of interesting things also in connection with the Innovation Hub, but with our digital strategy, and which we start to announce in the next month. Our US-based digital strategy is very linked to the global strategy. So we still don't have our team here working on a local digital strategy. This will be aligned with our global strategy. And details, we are at the moment in the period, in the discussions, in the phase to discuss the next step. But obviously there's a lot to come, because the consumer behavior is changing tremendously.
It's moving too fast,
and all the clubs have really to put all the efforts in order to fulfill what our consumer is really demanding, you know, because there only a few people are watching 90 minutes of football game on television, you know, so they have a second or third screen where they get the information from, and this is a fact. We cannot discuss about that, and all of the stakeholders in this business, soccer teams, TV producer, media right holder, has to accept this and has to work on a strategy to be prepared.
Yeah, it's moving tremendously fast. It's almost, you need to analyze young kids and how they interact around that, because you and I are way past that.
Exactly.
All righty, so let's move towards the end here. I'm just going to shoot a set of rapid-fire questions. What's the biggest moment in your career?
The biggest moment in my career was when I opened officially the office of WWP in Barcelona. Was a big event, and showed me that we did the right job, and this was the nicest moment in my career.
The deal that you've made that you're the most proud of?
I did a deal with MotoGP and the brand BMW, which is official car of MotoGP. MotoGP is not so strong here in the US, although in the past, United States had so many world champions. Nicky Hayden was the last one, but Eddie Lawson, Freddie Spencer, Kevin Schwantz, Kenny Roberts. So MotoGP is on a worldwide scale very strong, and a strong sport. And I brought BMW as the official car in 1999 to MotoGP, and I renewed this deal with Dorna, with the right holder, many times, until now the last contract is finishing in 21. So it was a 22 years deal, which is not common in sports business. And this is a deal I'm quite proud of.
You've obviously been involved in multiple negotiations. What would be a couple of sort of key tactics in being successful in a negotiation?
You have to know what the partner you're negotiating with really wants, you know. If you know exactly, and you have to be prepared, what is his goal, what is his wish, what is objective. If you know that, it's easier to come to whatever you want, you know. And but you have to be always well prepared. I met a lot of people who came to negotiation without any preparation, background information. And this is not a good basis in order to come to a nice result. You have to be well prepared, and you have to be consequent. You have really to until the finish, and to come to the goal you really wanted to have.
What's the most important characteristic to be successful in your position?
to be consequent and to work hard. But I think this is for all the successful people, not only in the management, but also in the sport. You know, it looks the result of big players looks so easy sometimes, but nobody or few people see the work behind. You know, so you have to work hard and be consequent.
People that you look up to that have influenced you or keep influencing you?
I mentioned before one of my former bosses, Hati Vairata, who was a ski racer, was always a idol for me before I started to work. And when I met him and knew how he works, I really know what it needs to be a world champion and then also successful in the business. So this is always was always a guy I was really looking at. And there are more. I met many people in my sports. You know, Mr. Mateschi, the guy this is the owner and the founder of Red Bull, Austrian company, who is really an unbelievably interesting guy. There are many people I met during the last decades.
Do you have a book recommendation?
I'm reading at the moment the CAA story. You know, this is the book from the agency, yeah, which they also work for us, and I'm in the beginning, but it could be a very interesting
it is.
Book.
It is very
Don't tell me too much, you know. I want to be, but there is no, don't have really a recommendation.
Okay,
no.
So we'll take that. I think it's a pretty good recommendation. Final few. The best player of all times?
Messi.
No question. Do you have anything you would like to recommend?
I would recommend to visit Barcelona. Really, to be honest, not because I'm working for Barcelona, but I'm at too many places, and I have some favorites of cities, and my three favorites are Vienna, New York, and Barcelona. But I really would recommend to visit Barcelona. This is the city took a great development in the last 20 years after the Olympics in 92, and it's really a great city. It has everything close to the sea. The food is tremendous, and the culture is so interesting. So really recommend everybody who's listening to us to visit this, and obviously to see a game at Camp Nou.
Fantastic. Last one. Who do you think I should interview on this podcast?
Sunil Gulati.
That sounds like a good one. I've reached out a couple of times. I'm trying to coordinate that one.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Arno, thank you so much for taking the time hosting me here at the Barcelona office. Very excited to see what's to come in the future for you guys. And so best of luck and thank you.
Great. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Listening, I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please subscribe on iTunes and write a review. I would really appreciate it as we grow this podcast one listener at a time. If you have any feedback or ideas, feel free to send me an email at sebastian@coffeeandfootball.com. You can also link up with me via Twitter. The handle is @coffeesfootball. Stay tuned for next episode. It will be another amazing one. Thanks again and have a great week.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.